Back here with you again for Justice for All with Bucks County DA Jen Shorn. Once a month here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM, we give you trends, topics, and other cases involved here in Bucks County that affects you, the listeners, the business owners, and the residents here of Bucks County. Listen, once a month now here on 107.3 FM and 1490 WBCB as we are joined by the aforementioned DA Jen Shorn. And DA Shorn, thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
It's quite the time. It's hot. People get crazier when it's hot, I guess. It's not not as simple as we're all locked in indoors, but it's great to have you here down here from Doylestown, so we can't thank you enough once a month for making the time.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
There's probably not a day in your calendar it's like the other, is there?
There is not, and it keeps it very interesting. I do love the job, but you are so right. You have to be ready to pivot any given day. Something new presents.
Well, we were talking off the air before we came on because it's a great conversation point that we talked about the new ballistic lab up there in, I believe it's Doylestown, correct?
No, you know, it's so funny enough, it's about 5 minutes from here.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
We were so fortunate in that we pursued a gun grant and were awarded a grant that allowed us to build. Before we built the lab, it allowed us to recruit a ballistics firearms toolmark examiner, veteran expert who has testified in countless homicides from the City of Philadelphia's Police Department. And prior to, with the exception of Montgomery County, every other county, Philadelphia and Montgomery County being the exception, had to use one expert or two experts from the Pennsylvania State Police.
Wow.
So 65 counties using the ballistics lab. And as you can imagine, the delay in information, critical information being gleaned from any shooting case, murder case, attempted murder case where a firearm was used was, unfortunately, negatively impactful in our cases. So when we were awarded this grant, we recruited the right guy, an expert, Greg Welsh, such a value add. And then we built a lab that we just pretty much launched the lab maybe 3 months ago. Down at our lower end Thiokol Evidence Warehouse. So, literally a stone's throw from here.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, so Greg was based out of Doylestown early
sure.
on until we were able to build the space, but it is a state of the art lab, and it allows Greg to take any evidence recovered from any Bucks County shooting. So it doesn't need to be just a case the county detectives out of my office are investigating. It could be a local law enforcement investigation where they're not using county detective assistance, but where spent casings were recovered and or projectiles recovered, whether that be from the victim, God willing, if they survive, but if they're deceased following an autopsy,
right.
where he can analyze the evidence, but also then test fire any firearms recovered in investigations. And as you know, I'm sure, it is so unique. Each projectile fired from a gun, that gun leaves unique markings on the projectile and this casing that you can, with certainty, identify the gun if you have the gun, if you recover the gun that it was fired from. And so it's absolutely invaluable in solving these cases with a much quicker turnaround. So it was really cool. We just had all of our interns. It's one of my favorite days of the year.
Yeah.
Our college and law school interns and accompany many of our younger DAs and some of our veteran DAs and the county detectives do a whole presentation for them on crime scenes. And they have the crime scene truck out. They have all of the different resources that we use in investigating scenes. And then they do a tour of the warehouse. And then now we get to incorporate the ballistics lab.
You mentioned in the short sector of time you've had it now. Have you noticed a huge drop-off in delay of these? It's vital now in this 21st century. What's the turnaround time you notice? Has it changed and how much?
Oh,
so?
It's remarkable. We can have that information at our fingertips within hours if the case dictates. It's remarkable. And one of the other cool things, and maybe it's a little heavy on the details, but it's so worth mentioning. We're part of a NIBIN partnership, N-I-B-I-N, and it's a national information ballistics integrated system that allows now, so if you have a spent casing at a shooting, you take those casings, you process them, you do the analysis with our expert, but then it's submitted to a shared terminal that we partner with Montgomery County, Delaware County, Chester County, and Philadelphia. And those casings go into this terminal. It used to be a human that had to do this, and it can generate hits to evidence recovered from other scenes, shooting scenes. We've solved New York City homicides,
wow.
New Jersey shootings. It is remarkable, the intelligence network that this offers. So it's like the twofold. We have our in-house guy do the work, turn it around immediately, and then we share it for this integrated system.
AI is so big now, and this is kind of an extension. You think ballistics, you don't think of like intelligence in that sense, but it really has almost created a whole new element for you and your team to kind of help you with cases.
It's unbelievable, and the partnership is so valued, so we're really lucky. But yeah, and so as I was there today talking to some of the interns, I shared a really cool story that kind of ties in. Well, I guess also it explains the evolution of where we were and how far we've come as it relates to this type of evidence. And so it's a pretty remarkable story from a 2004 and 2005 unsolved homicides. There were two separate ones in Bristol Township. One unsolved through no fault of any of the investigators working the cases. Sometimes cases go cold, leads go cold. But we had developed a potential suspect on the 2004, it was December of 2004, where a man was shot in Bristol Township at night. Case one unsolved. That April, so 4.5 months later, there was a subsequent shooting in Bristol Township that also went unsolved. It was believed, based on the ballistics, there was no casings at the scene, but it was believed that the projectile was fired from the same caliber gun, and it was a revolver, hence no casings. So we were able to develop known associates of the first murderer, the first suspect, was and the second suspect in the April shooting was a known associate of his. So we started working those cases in grand jury, and there was a really remarkable twist in the conclusion of the investigation that is just one of those things that I don't think I'll ever see in my career again.
And we brought up cold cases last time you were here. Does this new ballistics lab and the turnaround time allow you and the rest of your office to maybe allocate more resources than you potentially have a year or two prior because of this?
Oh, it's life-changing. It absolutely is. You know, there is so much information that you can that's contained within that evidence recovered from a scene or, God forbid, from a human body that allows you then to link a potential, you know, to know what type of firearm you're searching for. And then if you build enough probable cause and you have enough to search for that firearm, while the information is fresh, that's the key. These cases sometimes would go unsolved because, you know, once the information goes stale, you can't just search somebody's home because you believe they may still have the gun. Oftentimes, once a gun is used in a crime, they don't hold on to it for very long.
Right.
They will trade it with an associate, and hence why these two cases kind of put a really fine point on, you know, that type of criminal enterprise that we see, you know, gun being used in a homicide, that gun is now hot, I'm going to give it to, you know, a friend of mine, associate, whether it's drug trafficking organization, a, you know, loose gang affiliation. And so now when you have two shootings, it's looking like the same caliber, you know, it allows you to kind of narrow your focus on who you want to talk to, and then that's where the grand jury comes into play, and it's just a beautiful tool.
And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes as well. Have you noticed with the ballistic elements, because I'm looking at kind of like a spider web, does it begin with violent homicide, but maybe leads, as you mentioned, like drug or misdemeanor, and it brings all those things kind of together with just having this ballistic intelligence, it leads to a spider web of other kind of crimes and elements you can take care of?
You're so right. And oftentimes when we're developing a suspect in a homicide, but maybe we're not there yet, we don't have enough to, you know, to be satisfied that we're at the charging stage. But as you're investigating, if that person has already been a known drug associate involved in a drug trafficking organization, sometimes we're able to make the arrest on the drug trafficking, and that at least allows us the time to breathe, knowing this person is not on the street. There's a community safety concern, and that is, bar none, I find the hardest part of this job as DA, you know, when you know there's a dangerous offender out on the street, but yet you're not there, you don't have enough yet to charge, and finding that sweet spot of, like, when is enough?
Right.
You know, because that person's at large.
Sure.
And the community is not safe. So, to your point, that spider web, you often learn, and you know, before the show started, we talked about straw purchases. You'll learn about different criminal actions or all that tie in, unfortunately, to these violent crimes like shootings, homicides, attempted murders.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really it's fascinating.
Well, I'm glad you kind of got to share that here in Bucks County, leading the ways in a variety of ways your office is. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
We're going to step aside, take a short break, and come back with more. Talk more about ballistics, the use of grand jury cases in Bucks County,
yes.
And more here on Justice for All with Bucks County DA Jen Shore. We'll be right back.
Dion Square, located at South Oxford Valley and South Olds Boulevard, to get all your essentials in one place, with the following businesses ready to serve you: Pat Dion Beverages, CVS Pharmacy, Hair Cuttery, Smile Culture Dental, Biomat, Liberty Auto Tags, Pennsylvania Fine Wine and Spirits, Lee's Hoagie House, R&J Smoothies and Juices, AutoZone, and First National Bank and Trust of Newtown. Make Dion Square your one stop for all your shopping needs at South Oxford Valley Road and South Olds Boulevard in Fairless Hills.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog.
What?
Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit NHTSA.gov.
/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Album Sides is back on BCB. Join us weekday mornings at 11 for Album Sides. We've got great music. Gonna spin some of the best albums of all time. It's Album Sides with yours truly, the philosopher Chris Ermer. Weekday mornings at 11, right here on 107.3 FM and 1490 WBCB. You can also listen live at WBCB1490.com.
All right, welcome back here, Justice for All, with Bucks County DA Jen Shorn, presented by Dion Square Merchants here in Levittown. Stop there for all of your needs. Dentist office, hoagies, beer and wine, you name it, they have it here, as we are joined once a month by the Bucks County DA Jen Shorn here on 107.3 FM and 1490 AM. We left off talking about this brand spanking new ballistics lab here in Bucks County. Did you mention it's just Montgomery and Chester? Do they have them as well?
Montgomery and Chester do now as well. And so it's really
similar.
Just
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just newer as well?
Yeah,
okay.
Newer. Montgomery County's been in existence for a little while, but what's really cool about ours, it's state of the art, and it was literally a lab in a box, like in a shipping container.
Wow.
So we were able to install it in our current warehouse, and everything our expert needs to test fire the weapon safely and then analyze that data is like contained within the shipping container inside this giant warehouse.
Wow.
So it was very little, there was no real.
I won't complain about my workspace anymore.
No.
That's okay.
No.
So that's good.
It's
no.
A pretty cool space.
Yeah.
But yes, it's inside a warehouse. So yeah. Yes, very cool.
Well, there's we talked about kind of the spiderweb effect of a lot of these cases. And unfortunately, some of these cases do go to a Bucks County grand jury and things like that, and kind of the elements with the ballistic involved. You describe that and how valuable or important or you know, what it is here in Bucks County to have those grand jury cases.
It's so valuable. As you can imagine, oftentimes, especially when it involves a dangerous crime, people are afraid to provide information.
Right.
For very good reason. They're afraid of retaliation, which I will say does not thankfully happen much in Bucks County. We are very fortunate. They're afraid of the information not leading to a successful arrest and prosecution. I will say we are outstanding at that in Montgomery County, in Bucks County. Montgomery County, too. My good friends in Montgomery County, excuse me. But you can imagine it kind of becomes a cycle in that, you know, if you put yourself out there and you come forward with information and the case remains unsolved and it gets out that you provided information as to the likely perpetrator, now you've made yourself and your family vulnerable. So you have to be able to back it up. And that's why, you know, when we see what's happening not among Philadelphia police, the men and women in the Philadelphia Police Department, they are working so hard. But when you see what's happening in the district attorney's office and, you know, the work not being done on that end, you understand why the community is afraid to cooperate. You know, if there's no guarantee that person is going to be removed from the street, you know, it would be, it's a scary thought to come forward. So the grand jury allows us to do a few things. I'll speak generally as to some of them, but most importantly, it allows us to convene in secret and really keep the information contained as to who's cooperating, keep the anonymity of the cooperator until the legal process unfolds with a successful arrest and prosecution.
Sure.
I really became involved in the grand jury in 2008. And I then later ran the grand jury for 12 years because I thought this is the most amazing tool we have as prosecutors.
Remember the first case? If you can speak on it, do you remember
it? It's the case I'm going to talk about.
Good,
It's actually pretty remarkable. It was an unsolved 2004 Bristol Township homicide. As mentioned, it happened in December of 2004. Unfortunately, a father of two was struggling with addiction. He was sober for quite some time, you know, had a setback, went to go purchase drugs, drove through in an open-air drug market in Bristol Township where, you know, commonly you just pull up, exchange money for drugs, and you go. He was the victim of an intentional killing and robbery. So it was a gunpoint robbery, and as he tried to just say, "No, don't do this, he was fatally shot. Very tragic for his wife and kids, as you can imagine. And so what we know is, tough scene. We know that the people out there at that time of night were known users and dealers. There were no other eyewitnesses out there. So as you can imagine, you know, oftentimes they're not inclined to cooperate for the reasons I stated, but also perhaps their own criminal culpability.
Sure.
So tough scene. There was no spent casings, and the ballistics analysis of the projectiles recovered from his body and his vehicle indicated it was revolver used. So limited ballistics evidence, because you're not getting spent casings when you're using a revolver to carry out a homicide. That being said, 4.5 months later, there was another robbery in Bristol Township where there were individuals playing dice in the middle of the night, a dice game. An individual who was a Trenton gang member tried to hold the individuals playing dice up at gunpoint. One of the people playing in the dice game was armed with the same caliber gun that was used in this December homicide. When the robber held them up at gunpoint, the other guy pulls out his gun. His name is James Williams, and he chases essentially the robber down the street. Now, he fires and shoots the guy fatally in the back. So may have been justified, was justified pulling out the gun, may have been justified to fire that gun as the robbery was unfolding. But once somebody's running away, you can't shoot somebody in the back. So a crime definitely occurred, distinguishable from the first, but very much a case that we were investigating. And but interestingly enough, based on the great investigative work that was done, it was believed that the perpetrator of the first homicide was a known associate of, we had a good ID on the person who used this gun fatally shooting the robber. We believe they were known associates based on all the information gathered, and the ballistics indicated the same gun was used. The analysis of the projectiles indicated it was fired from the same caliber gun and the, in fact, same gun used in the December homicide.
Wow.
So now we know we have someone to put a tremendous amount of pressure on in the hopes of identifying the December homicide. So I got the case. I had just come back from having my first child. I was on maternity leave, and there was a need for, you know, people to go into grand jury. I was anxious to get, I had a clean slate. All my cases were, you know, resolved before I went out on maternity leave, and I was anxious to go back in. It was about 4 years after these cases went unsolved, and so they said, are you interested in looking at these cases? And also, it was, you know, the thought was that grand jury would be passed to me after the then first assistant, Dave Zellis, had done it for a number of years. So I dove right in and got to work with a great detective, who was the detective on both cases at the time, a Bristol Township detective. Needless to say, since we've hired him in my office. Anyway, we started developing really good information to corroborate what we already knew about this December homicide. But we really focused on the perpetrator of what this shooting death was, which we'll call it, it's called an imperfect self-defense, the second case. So it's essentially when you use lethal force, you think you're justified, but the law says, no, you're not. So it's not a homicide, it's a manslaughter. So it's it recognizes that you may have thought you were justified, but you're not, but it's not an intentional killing with malice, like right. A first degree. So we put a tremendous amount of pressure on this suspect, who happened to be a guy who was already incarcerated for drug activity in the state, and we knew he went by the street name Gutta, and he was also a rap artist, and he, very articulate man, who kind of romanticized the gang and gun lifestyle, drug trafficking lifestyle, and unfortunately, you know, obviously got caught dealing drugs, but also using this gun and this imperfect self-defense. And one of those pretty remarkable career experiences in that it took some time and a great deal of work. We were in grand jury on both of those cases for almost a year, but we got Gutta essentially to confess on the stand to the fact that, obviously, we told him, you may have thought your case was justifiable. It's not, but it's also not first-degree murder. If you continue to, you know, thwart our efforts, it could look like more of an intent. So he ultimately, essentially, confessed to his crime, his right. manslaughter, but most importantly, acknowledged what we believed all along, and the ballistics indicated that he got the gun from the suspect in the December homicide, Karan Handy. And he said that Karan had given him the gun. He knew the gun was hot, if you will, indicating that it was used in a crime, a serious crime, probably a homicide, and that's why Karan didn't want it on his person anymore. But he believed, you know, he knew that the gun was, and he didn't intend to use it because obviously it compromised the homicide investigation, the December one. Anyway, as he's confessing, and mind you, it's about 5 years after the homicides occurred that we get him to confess in grand jury with a tremendous amount of pressure and investigative resources that we use leading up to the witness being on the stand. We know that there is, we're hoping and praying that he can tell us where the gun is, because then it's game over. When you have the physical gun to match up to the projectile that was recovered from the deceased, you know it's game over. That's that direct evidence instead of the circumstantial evidence that we would need. So we're anxiously hoping and praying. He's like, here's where the gun is. He said, I'm going to tell you, you know, he said, I knew at that point I had to get rid of the gun. I knew it was involved in something really bad before, and then I used it. And he said, I was going to pick up drugs from my dealer, my supplier, in outside of Harrisburg in Dauphin County. And he goes, I don't take toll roads. I would take, you know, our local route out to Harrisburg, which we knew would be Route 30 based on what he described. And he said he was with another drug associate, and guy didn't know that he had this gun on him, that Gutta had this gun. And he said, I told him, pull over, I have to take a leak. And he said, pull over. And he ran down the embankment of the Susquehanna River, and I tossed it in the Susquehanna. So we're like, oh my gosh, 5 years earlier, you know, we are never going to recover right. this gun. We're kind of crestfallen, like we got this great lead and a really, you know, game changer.
Sure.
But the gun would have been what
right.
really sealed his fate. And so it's kind of one of those hand of God moments, or if you will, people think, oh, it's you're charmed, you got lucky. I'd like to think it was the hard work and nonstop dedication, but the timing was remarkable, because at the same time that Gutta is telling us this, 5 years after these homicides, we have a chief retiring from a small police department along the Susquehanna River, just outside of, in Dauphin County, outside of Harrisburg. And apparently, and I learned a lot about this, that due to the hydroelectric power that is generated from the Susquehanna. There's a series of dams that they do. I don't know if it's annual or, you know, every 2 years, but they draw down the Susquehanna. So they essentially, the river is, you know, as wide as you traditionally see it, and then they draw it down to where it's a trickle.
It's walkable almost.
Walkable.
So you're at the bait, right. Wow.
People
okay.
do artifacting all along the now exposed, you know, what their banks, if you will, but they were, you know, underwater.
Yeah.
So it's common for everyone in that area that knows this to artifact along the, you know, the now exposed part of the riverbed. And so I said December was the homicide that I was investigating, the Crown Handy homicide. April was the dice game robbery shooting. It was that June, I believe, was when the Schuylkill River or the Susquehanna River drawdown occurred, and when James Williams, the perpetrator of the imperfect self-defense April shooting, said that that was when he dumped the gun, you know, a couple weeks prior in the river when he was picking up his next supply of drugs. Well, a couple was artifacting along the river, found the .22 caliber gun that on the banks, and did the right thing. They turned it over to the police chief. You know, I guess the police chief, you know, probably, you know, has, you know, things happen, human nature.
Sure.
He throws it in a desk drawer. And it sits for about 4.5 years, and he's now getting ready to retire. And so had he put that information in the Pennsylvania PASICS, it's like a criminal intelligence network that, you know, all law enforcement and PA uses, if he had put it in when it was recovered, it would have been of no value to us. Had he put it in a year later, it would have been no value. It just happened to be that as he's retiring, he's thinking, I never did anything with this gun. I should probably make sure it goes into PASICS. He puts it into the intelligence network that goes out, and it's literally, like I said, it's like a movie. If you had a split screen, and we have James Williams confessing that the gun he used in his shooting was the same gun that he got from Karan Handy, our suspect in the murder. Now, he didn't know we had already developed a strong case against Karan, but it validated everything we knew. And lo and behold, that gun goes into PASICS maybe 2 days after we get this confession, and my very...
And that's a database you're checking daily?
Daily.
Okay.
And my affiant in the case, the detective, Detective Tim Furman, happened to be super diligent, and he sees this PASICS hit come out, and the origin of the gun was stolen out of, I think, Upper Darby, Delaware County, years before, but kind of entered the criminal world, and not uncommon for it to be, like, loosely, you know, in this area, but without a doubt, it was very corroded, and you know, the ballistics analysis in that case, we had to wait quite some time because we didn't have our in-house guy. You know, it was challenging because of the, you know, the barrel of the gun being corroded and whatnot. But there's no doubt in our mind that that was the same gun. If you did the drawdown, like naturally things pull, I guess it would be, I don't know if it's east or south. I don't know the direction of the river flow, but it pulls in the direction, you know, when you're drawing down, and it would have been exactly where he pinpointed. Where he threw it in the river, minus, you know, the flow of the river.
Wow.
So it's just one of those things where it's just like timing was everything in that case. And I just shared that story with our interns today, and I thought, you know, I'm going to share it today because it was just one of those things kind of chilling. And that was, you know, we had already made the arrest in the Karan Handy case. We had a lot of creative things we did to build the case, but that was, if you will, the direct piece that just sealed the deal.
And it all came because of ballistics.
Ballistics.
All full circle spider web.
Full circle. Yep. Full circle.
How often now in violent crimes is ballistics a key point of evidence for you? Is it 90%? I mean, is it how valuable is it
nowadays?
It's
so valuable. It is such a key piece of evidence. You know, unfortunately, and kind of, if you will, kind of in a funny note, the interns were like, who knew that machetes were so common in Bucks County? Because obviously we sadly had a horrific, horrific case in the Justin Moen homicide where a machete was used, and we had a road rage case where a machete was used. And I'm like, well, that not very common, but ballistics, very common. Not to make light of that poor tragedy in Justin Moen, that is not the point at all. My God, that family, there's every family I've seen the suffering. Ballistics is so key, and the information, it can help point us to individuals, associates. It gathers intel beyond just your lands and grooves to say it was fired from this type of gun. That coupled with the use of the grand jury, one of my most proud moments as a DA recently was this Friday, a verdict came out in a murder that was several years cold of Herbert Lyles, and his family thought we had forgotten about that case. And it was a Bristol Township shooting case that took years and years to build and develop, and we couldn't tell them that we were in the grand jury. And it passed through a couple of my colleagues, because some people have since moved on to, you know, different positions, and but we never forgot that case. And and I got to witness that jury come back on a third-degree murder verdict, and that family get justice for Herbert Lyles. And that would not happen with the without the skilled work that our detectives do,
yeah.
and the knowledge, the ballistics, in conjunction with just developing the intel that they need to identify the likely suspects, and then the commitment that our office has in assigning a prosecutor and using the grand jury and putting, as Matt Weintraub and I used to say, it's the perfect system of levers and pull, like what levers to pull, what buttons to push,
yeah.
you know, to kind of shake something loose. People are afraid to provide information, or people, you know, but you can compel them to answer the questions before the grand jury.
Right. Do you notice a different emotional feel in grand jury cases? It's, I mean, it's individuals from this area, it's peers, it's people like you mentioned who potentially at first were, you know, there's a human element to this that you are a really important piece of. Do you notice a difference? Just to kind of put a wrap on this, the grand jury element.
I do, Matt, and I just had the chills as you said this. Like, it is one of the things too that I am just blown away with. And you talk about, you know, the people that are selected, randomly selected. They don't know if they're getting a summons for 2 days for a trial, a jury summons. It doesn't distinguish between grand jury and traditional jury. And then they find out, you know, you're being asked to serve for 2 years, 1 day a week, up to 2 years. Oftentimes it's 18 months, but we can extend for 6. And so in the last homicide trial, I've had a homicide plea recently, but that I prosecuted last January, 3 of those grand jurors came back. So they sat through that, and we'll talk about this case, I believe, on a later show, the Joy Hibbs homicide,
yeah.
unsolved from 1991. Her children, who were, you know, her daughter's my age and her son is, you know, in his 40s, and her husband testified, and it was as if they were 16 and 12 still, because the emotion was still so raw. And I looked at that room of grand jurors, and there wasn't a dry eye. And the fact that those grand jurors knew they served in secret, and few people ever know what they did, but we always make sure they know how critical they are.
Yeah.
Because without them serving, we can't compel. We do the talking, but they provide questions at the conclusion of our questions that are insightful and a unique perspective that maybe we who are so close to the case don't have. But when they come back a year later and watch the trials in the cases,
yeah.
And I ran into one of the jurors recently.
I was going to ask that. How often does that happen to you, your colleagues?
So cool. I hear, I'll be walking in Costco and hear, I was C7. And we identify the jurors not by name, by number.
Right.
We keep their anonymity. Ms. Shorn, I was C7. And I wave, and sometimes I get hugs. But at an event recently, a gentleman who's an attorney, but not a criminal attorney, I need you to meet my wife. And he's like, Ms. Shorn is the one I was talking to you about, and she did this case, and I can, and then her colleague, Mr. Joes, did this case, and I went to trial, and he saw that case, and then her colleague, and he was so proud to be able to finally tell, because they're not even allowed to tell their loved ones
yeah,
what they're dealing
right.
with. But it's like you said, it takes our community to get it done
yeah.
sometimes in these cases. But what they always say at the conclusion makes me so proud is we had no idea the level of the professionalism and the level of skill that the detectives have and then the prosecutors have
wow.
in getting the job done. And that makes me proud.
So. Pulls and levers, like you said.
Pulls so, and levers,
yes,
exactly.
Well, we're going to step aside and pull a commercial lever. We're going to come back, wrap things up here with Jen Shorn, kind of put a thing on ballistics, guns, straw gun purchases, and more here. You're listening to Justice for All, presented by Dion Square Merchants here on 107.3 FM and 1490 WBCB. We'll be right back.
Head out to Dion Square, located at South Oxford Valley and South Olds Boulevard, to get all your essentials in one place, with the following businesses ready to serve you. Pat Dion Beverages, CVS Pharmacy, Hair Cuttery, Smile Culture Dental, Biomat, Liberty Auto Tags, Pennsylvania Fine Wine and Spirits, Lee's Hoagie House, R&J Smoothies and Juices, AutoZone, and First National Bank and Trust of Newtown. Make Dion Square your one stop for all your shopping needs at South Oxford Valley Road in South Olds Boulevard in Fairless Hills.
WBCV is now on your FM dial at 107.3, serving Bucks, Burlington, and Mercer counties since 1957. You can now listen to all your WBCV favorites crystal clear on 107.3 FM, a new age for WBCV on a new frequency, 107.3.
Hey, this is Jonesy. Kick off your Thursday and Friday evenings in style. Join me for an eclectic freeform mix of the hits and beyond. It's a happening, a musical journey. It's the Glenn Jones Radio Experience, right here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM, Thursday and Friday, 5 to 6 p.m., directly following the legendary Jerry Blavitt. Radio, the way it ought to be.
Head out to Dion Square, located at South Oxford Valley and South Olds Boulevard, to get all your essentials in one place, with the following businesses ready to serve you. Pat Dion Beverages, CVS Pharmacy, Hair Cuttery, Smile Culture Dental, Biomat, Liberty Auto Tags, Pennsylvania Fine Wine and Spirits, Lee's Hoagie House, R&J Smoothies and Juices, AutoZone, and First National Bank and Trust of Newtown. Make Dion Square your one stop for all your shopping needs at South Oxford Valley Road and South Olds Boulevard in Fairless Hills.
Welcome back here, Justice for All on 1490 WBCB, 107.3 FM here in Levittown as we once a month, presented by Dion Square Merchants, meet with your DA, Jen Shorn, here as she gives you trending topics, cold cases, and much more here that's going on in Bucks County. We can't thank Jen enough for her time between all your personal, and you have kids, college is coming up, and we can't thank you enough for coming out here in Levittown and giving us a few minutes once a month.
Of course, my pleasure.
Before we move on to some of the kind of current events going on in the DA's office, I wanted to kind of put a bow on the ballistics element. You know, I'm going back maybe 15, 20 some odd years, filing off serial numbers was a big, element to finding, hot guns or things of that nature. But 3D and straw gun purchases now are in vogue now, kind of more than ever. What percentage, if you could give it, is that type of weapon now more than DA's office?
Oh, gosh, we're seeing it with such frequency. We've seen countless ghost gun cases, but as you said, the 3D printed, the we officially call personally manufactured firearms, and they're so difficult because obviously there's no serial number, they're hard to trace. The same ballistics analysis still happens as far as if you are lucky enough to recover the personally manufactured firearm and you have evidence from a scene, from a shooting scene, we could do the same analysis, but they are very, very, it's a concerning challenge that law enforcement is facing now, and perhaps one of the most chilling things I've seen enter in, the criminal organizations are these switches, the conversion switches that you can buy from China. And it looks like a small little device could hang from a keychain, but can convert a semi-automatic to a fully automatic firearm. It can outpace...
It's like a bump or something similar to that?
It's beyond a bump. So they'll do a bump stock to have maximum capacity in the ammunition. But it literally converts it. Instead of the processing of a semi-automatic, it's rapid fire. And if you put it toe-to-toe with a machine gun... It can outpace a machine gun.
Wow.
And so it is so concerning for obviously law enforcement or the concern of mass shootings because it is an aftermarket thing that is not yet regulated in the Commonwealth of PA. And you could put it on and, early on law enforcement didn't even know to look for it because it could be hanging from a keychain and it's a literal conversion switch. So you think of, law enforcement being outgunned in, any traditional... I've seen the most remarkable... de-escalation tactics and safe surrender, if you will, of individuals who are, either hostage situation or firearms, and they're threatening to harm themselves. I can't even imagine how you prepare for that. So that coupled with you know, just the inability to trace these ghost guns is a challenge that Montgomery County homicide, where the junk luggers won, where it was Bucks County.
I remember the address.
They inadvertently.
I remember. Yeah.
They also uncovered in that these same perpetrators were producing personally manufactured firearms and trading in them. So, like, it is such a, you talk about that web, that criminal web.
Yeah.
So not only were they robbing people, killing people, but then, you know, engaged in illegal firearms trafficking.
What are some tactics to kind of combat this? I mean, is it so new there aren't a ton? Or what's the best route for detectives you talk to in police and
they
in your
are
office?
So good at staying on the cutting edge. And so some of the stuff I'll hold back a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, absolutely.
You know,
yeah,
it's like a tricky balance.
There are things that we can push back already.
There are
good
things that we can push back on and, you know, it's just, it's frightening. But I will say, anyone who thinks they're going to get away with having, you know, these in their possession, they're sorely mistaken, you know, if they're entering Bucks County. You know, we are very good at combating. And hence why we were awarded the grant. You have to back it up and you have to show why you're worthy of this investment into your law enforcement community and prosecution community.
Well, you've been investing your time, energy, and efforts here with us today and in your community. Just to wrap things up today, I know I want to talk current events here in the DA's office. I know there was a release that came, our news director, LeComp, passed along to you. If you want to kind of update the listeners about a case that became a regional kind of news months ago, if you want to get an update on it, by all means.
Yeah, this was such a heart-wrenching case. You know, unfortunately, I've seen too many of these throughout my career, and as you know, this is a huge priority of mine, combating child sexual abuse, obviously child physical abuse, but we have to do more than just passively respond to the cases. So we've been proactive in trying to identify these online traffickers, because we know that it doesn't just stop at online exploitation of children. And in this particular case, this man, and I use the term loosely, this predator, I will say more accurately, 29-year-old Zachary McCauley, was a Kentucky resident who met a little girl, 13 years of age, from Central Bucks, and portrayed himself as a boy her age and started an online romance, and then slowly but surely broke her down, and she shared some personal details, enough for him to know where she lived, who she lived with, and started to have her engage in things that she would never otherwise have done, because he was essentially, you know, on the break, you and I used the term like blackmail, and maybe not in the official sense, but he was exploiting her, saying, if you don't do these things, if you don't have sex with men, random strangers, where I'm going to essentially traffic you in the sex trade and send me video streams of it, then I will harm your mom, I will harm your family members, your loved ones, I know where you live. And it's more than that. There's like a psychological breakdown, and you have to do this for me if you love me. Well, you know, this child ended up being trafficked to a 67-year-old man for sex, a 42-year-old man for sex, and all of the strings were being pulled by this guy in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And to the point where she could not, she felt there was no way out. She couldn't not do what he was telling her. Finally, thankfully, her mother was remarkable in that suspected something and engaged in that dialogue and provided the safety net. But it was in response to, we had just had a press conference on a trafficker from Humeville that we had arrested, and the mom thought her daughter was this victim, perhaps this guy's victim, because a Bucks County man. Turns out it was, in fact, a totally different guy, but from Kentucky. Well, we just got him in our custody, finally. He was arrested in Kentucky on Kentucky charges and our charges, but we had to wait to have him extradited back to Pennsylvania. So he is the puppet master. He is one disturbed individual. These are allegations, so I have to say that anytime I'm talking to, you know, the public. But I'm so confident in the evidence in this case. But we finally have him in our custody. We had the other two in our custody pretty quickly, because they were local Pennsylvania residents. There's an extradition process for out-of-state residents. So he is in our Bucks County Correctional Facility to the tune of $10 million bail set by Judge Gary Gambardella, thankfully reinforcing that this man poses a real danger to the community.
And now that he's back in possession here, how quickly now, how much of a, and you mentioned before we started, because how important this is for you, these kind of acts, do you just want to get you and your team to just immediately, even though there's a process you mentioned, to start it?
Start it. So interestingly enough, the judge set the preliminary hearing, which is the first stage in the criminal prosecution, I believe, for the 29th of July. Or no, excuse me, the 31st of July.
Seems pretty fast.
Yeah, pretty fast. So I know the team on this case, and I'm confident they'll be, you know, if they're not ready then, that's usually just a scheduling thing. Maybe someone's in trial on another matter, but they will be ready to put this case up and prosecute this case to the fullest. I mean, there is no question this man poses a very real danger to children in our community. And every community.
Absolutely.
His reach was from Kentucky.
Yeah. No, it's dangerous. Like you mentioned, the web of individuals, you know, across there. Elsewhere, and again, I know it's ongoing, so I there's not much you can talk about, but there's a Hilltown situation, you know, last week where there was a killing of an 89-year-old woman. I know there was some new developments. I don't expect you to go into them, but if you can just alert, you know, listeners and residents here of Bucks County of anything, by all means.
Yes. It's still very much an active investigation. I can assure the community, we believe the community at large is safe. This was a very targeted homicide. We have some information that we may be releasing to the public in the next couple of days that we believe the public may possess some knowledge, not knowing the relevance at this juncture. So we hope to have an update, but I am just getting regular updates as to the investigation. I just could not say enough about Hilltown Township Police, working in conjunction with my colleagues in my office, Bucks County District Attorney's Office, County Detectives, and the Chief from Hilltown. Everybody just so professional. I am, you know, I am confident that there will be some information in the hopeful, not too distant future as to major developments, but we may have some information in the next day or two where we appeal to the public for a very specific reason. So I won't be able to answer much at that time, but I always find our public to be so conscientious and willing to, and they might not know they possess knowledge of something, so it's our job to put it out there in that capacity.
And that's how I was going to leave today. I know your office is an extension of this community, upper, middle, you know, lower Bucks County, whether it's Hilltown, Bent Salem, Langhorne, you know, whatever it is. I know that's really important to you for individuals. Like you said, if you notice something or see something or want to potentially inform someone, please do so. I know your office is, you know, front and center with that.
Yeah, it's so valuable, and we're lucky because people do stand up every time. Every time there's an ask, we get something back. So.
Well, we got you for an hour today. We can't thank you enough so much, DA Jen Shorn,
you
for your
so
time
much,
today.
Matt.
We'll see you next month. Once again, once a month, Justice for All here with Bucks County DA Jen Shorn, presented by Dion Square Merchants. We will see everyone next month. Take care, everyone.